This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
I want to start with a little story. So it was in the fall, and we were staying on our friend's farm in the north of Vermont, right on the Canadian border, and it was beautiful. I mean, colors of the fall foliage were at peak, and it was a gorgeous blue sky day. And Devin and I had been traveling, living in our van for about half a year at this point, just going from place to place, teaching meditation, teaching mindfulness. And it was this day that we were supposed to take pictures. We were supposed to take pictures for our website, and we were supposed to take pictures for Instagram. And there was just one problem. We were totally exhausted. Like, not the kind of tired where you just need a nap, but the kind of tired where you're like bone tired, dried up. You just feel like you've got nothing left to give to the world. And the second problem was that we both really don't like having our picture taken. And then a third problem was that Devin had completely forgotten that we were going to take pictures. And so as I came up to the van at like 8:40 in the morning, all full of cheer after my cup of coffee, like ready to psych her up to take these photographs for all of these different things we needed them for, she was just gearing up to respond to like 25 different emails from students and from organizers and from board that she's on and all these different things. And so I came up to her and I said, hey, really peppy. Hey, are you ready to take some pictures? And she didn't even look up from her computer. She just said, what pictures? And like, it's like, oh God, uh-oh. I was like, oh, you know, these pictures that we're supposed to do with Isabella. Isabella's our friend who's like this really gifted photographer, and we'd lined it all up. And Devin was like, I don't want to take pictures. Maybe you've had moments like this. If you're in a partnership or even a friendship, or if you're a parent, you've had these moments where some, you know, your partner or your child or your significant other, something like they're just, and you're digging. You're like digging for those relational skills. You're like, I'm just going to take a deep breath here. I'm just going to hold it together and we're going to get through this. So I said, yeah, you know, taking pictures, we don't love it. It's not great. I don't really like it either. And then Devin said to me, if you hadn't shaved your beard, we wouldn't even need these pictures. That one landed pretty good. It's like, oh God, really? And I, again, like reaching for some deeper relational skills, trying to remember all the things that we tell all of you in this beautiful book that we were writing at that time. Right? Like, what do you say in these moments? Because I knew Devin was just really tired and kind of moody and bristly, and if we could just get through this, it would be fine. So I was like, yeah, no, I know, I get it. I understand. We're tired. The pictures, we don't like it. It's not great. And then Devin said, I'm not doing the pictures. And I lost my shit. You may also have those moments where you're like on it, you're on it, you're doing well, you're cool, you know, you're figuring it out, And then, boom, you've got no relation skills left. And I just lost my cool. And then she lost her cool right back at me. And then I lost my cool right back at her. And it was kind of like we were on one of those tandem bicycles, just shooting downhill, and the brakes were broken, and we were just swerving and out of control. And for like 2 minutes, we went back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, dragging up old hurts, dragging up old resentments, making all kinds of absolutist statements, doing everything that we tell our students not to do in the middle of a fight. And then Devin, at some point, paused. And I watched her put her hand on her heart, which sounds a little bit ridiculous, but it's actually a beautiful way to settle an overactivated nervous system. And she said to me, "Could we pause?" And I have to admit, my first thought was, "Seriously? Like, now you're the wise one, right? Like, we're gonna pause." But I did. I shut my mouth. She paused. I paused, and I could kind of come back and see if I could take a couple of deep breaths and get back into my deeper intention. And we were quiet for quite a while. Felt like a long time. It was probably like 60 seconds. Maybe it was less than that, but it felt like a long time. And then finally, Devin said, "You know what? I'm sorry. I'm tired. You're tired." And it's like, again, relationships are like this constant back and forth where the atmosphere is always changing. I felt myself again, like soften, come back to grounding, come back to my intention. And pretty soon, you know, we were like talked it out, found each other again. And like, I could really see where she was coming from. And she could start to like really see where I was coming from. And like a few minutes later, a little bit late, we're walking arm in arm to get our pictures taken. So I tell this story for a couple of reasons. One, the founding principle of our book is that relationships are rough. Have you noticed this? Partnerships are rough, parenting is rough. Dealing with your own, maybe aging parents is rough. Friendships can be rough. Like relationships are by nature, it's like built in. It is a feature, not a bug. Relationships are rough. They can be stressful. They can be sometimes unsatisfying. They can be unreliable. They're always changing underneath your feet. You get some ground underneath and then it shifts again. You think you know what's up and then it changes again. And we have this myth in our culture that it's supposed to be happily ever after, especially with partnership, right? Like the hard part is finding the right person. But once you find the right person, then it's smooth sailing. No, right? Who thinks? I mean, none of us probably intellectually think that. We're all adults here, but it's so baked in to the discourse. It's so baked into the narrative, the story that we have been told again and again and again. So we think if we're struggling in our partnership or we're struggling in a friendship, then we must be doing something wrong. It's our fault. And especially if we're meditators, there can be this kind of like super ego judgmental voice. It's like, if I'm irritated with my partner, I'm not practicing mindfulness well, right? I should be calm by now. I go to UCLA Health. I do mindfulness-based stress reduction. I've learned all these skills. But no matter how many skills you have learned, relationships, and the more intimate those relationships are, the more charged they are going to be. Right? So we have these friends, Gio and Steven, not their real names. We don't tell any real names in the book, but Gio and Steven, good friends of ours, they've been mindfulness teachers for years and years. And they got together in their 40s, mature adult humans with a lot of wisdom. They're actually, right, they're meditation teachers. They have a lot of understanding about how things work. And the first year of their relationship was like all sunshine, bright, 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 happy, joyful, connected, just discovering so much in common, so many shared interests, so many like shared ways of being. It's like they had been waiting all their lives just to find each other. So that lasted like a year or two. And then the flip side, like to the extent that they were connected and they were so excited to be there, that was as intense as it got when they realized, oh, but there are all of these ways that we are simultaneously incompatible. And you do this thing that makes me crazy, and you do this thing that makes me crazy. And I don't like the way that you put the dishes in the dishwasher, and you're spending more money than I feel comfortable with. And I don't like to travel, but you want to travel the world. And they got into all of these pieces that were like, not compatible, and they're trying to talk it out and talk it out and talk it out some more, trying to fix the problem of these incompatibilities. And they just kept going around and around and around in this rut until one day they were sitting on the couch, and Gio said to Steven, "You know what? Relationships are dukkha." And so dukkha is this Buddhist word that you may have not heard before, but it means something like sometimes it gets translated as suffering, like dukkha means suffering, but it's more like unsatisfying or like subtly not quite going to scratch the itch. That's what dukkha means. Like, so relationships are dukkha. And if we believe that relationships are supposed to make us happy all the time, if we believe that all we need to do is just find the right person and then we're going to have smooth sailing forever after, it just compounds that difficulty. It makes us wrong. It makes the partner wrong. It makes the situation wrong. And the way through it is not necessarily to fix all of these unsolvable problems, but it's to bring the kind of presence that we're all learning here, right, at UCLA Health. We can bring the same awareness that we bring to our own body, our own heart, our own mind. We can bring that into all of the different areas of our life, and then we can bring them into the intimacies of our life with a lot of curiosity and a kind of letting go of our scripts and our ideas and becoming stable in what really is true. And this leads to a deeper intimacy, to an actually a greater love, a more stable love, and an ability to serve the world together, so relationships can become a path of freedom. When I was a teenager, I went through probably the hardest time of my life. I had a difficult time. I had a lot of anxiety when I was a teenager. I had a lot of family difficulty and personal difficulty. And I was in a relationship with my first girlfriend. We were together for 2 years and we were very much in love. And she was kind of my best friend. And then my senior year of high school, we broke up. And she had been kind of my ballast. She had been what I was leaning on so much of the time in my life. And so when we broke up, I felt completely lost. I felt like I was in a free fall. Like I just didn't know. I didn't know who to be in that moment. And I was walking down the hall in my high school, and my favorite teacher, whose name is, we call him Victor in the book, his name is Victor. He came up to me and he didn't know anything that was going on. He didn't know the story. He just came up to me in the hall and he said, "Hey, do you want to have lunch?" And I said, "Yes," because he was kind of like my hero. He was the first meditator that I ever met, and I thought he was so cool. So he took me to lunch. We went to this pizza place and we sat down together, and he said to me, "What's up? What's going on?" And I just spilled. I just unloaded all of my doubts, all of my anxieties, all of my confusion, my regret, my guilt. And he just listened. That was it. He nodded. He said something encouraging every once in a while. But for 10 or 15 minutes, he just listened to me with this like warm awareness. I could feel the sense of being, it was like almost bathing in his attention. I think I had never been listened to in that way before. And by the end of me talking, like he never gave me the entire time, he never gave me any advice. He never told me what to do. He never gave, like talked about relationships. He didn't really say much of anything. He just listened. And by the end of that lunch, I felt like I had put down 100-pound backpack, like just dropped it. And I felt myself more like whole and integrated. I felt myself less confused, more able to understand what I might do next. It was kind of amazing. I mean, you could think for yourself about a time when somebody really listened to you. Maybe it was a long time ago. Maybe it was recent. Could be a therapist, could be a friend. Like, what did it feel like to have somebody really listen? For some of us, it might even be a little frightening sometimes when somebody really deeply listens. But for a lot of us, it feels like we reconnect with ourselves through another person's loving awareness, through their really listening deeply. What I didn't realize at that time, at lunch with Victor, was that I could learn to offer this kind of listening to myself. And this is what we do in meditation. This is what we do when we practice mindfulness. This is what we did in the meditation with Devin a little earlier. We're just learning to really listen. To really feel what is alive here in my body, what is moving through my own heart, what kinds of thoughts are in my mind. And when we give ourselves that deep, sustaining listening, we then become more able to extend that to another. And this is the foundation for intimacy in a partnership, in a friendship, with children, even with coworkers. Like this ability to really sustain a loving awareness on our own experience allows us then. It's almost like we learn to wrap another person in that awareness. We learn to include someone else in that warm awareness, in that kind attention. So we learn to listen to ourselves. We learn to listen to another. And then there's a third. And we talk about this in the book. It's like listening to the relationship itself, which isn't just me and it isn't just you. It's something that exists almost in between us, like a third space or like a third body. And we can learn to listen to that relationship. We can learn to listen to, maybe you could call it the context. Or we could learn to listen to the relational dynamic, the subtlety that is happening, the flow that is happening between us. We can learn to listen to that third space. And so there are a lot of practices that we can do in our lives to learn to listen in this way. One is we just, you know, take 5 minutes, close our eyes, and just bring our attention here. We just receive what is alive here. Honestly, I don't know if we can do this too much. And it is such a gift to others if we give that to ourselves. Right? If you think about having children, maybe you have kids. What do they really, really want? They want to be heard, right? They want to be acknowledged. They want to know that they are valued. And so when you learn to value your own experience enough to give it your full presence, then you can include them in that full presence. So just bringing awareness again and again back to your own experience. The other one we talk about in the book is called couch non-meditation. Right? Sometimes meditation is just a little bit too much. Couch non-meditation just means you put your phone on airplane mode or do not disturb. You put it on the side table. You don't look at it for a few minutes. And you just sit on your couch and go, ah. You should try it. Just like that. Ah. You don't even worry too much if you're like paying great attention. You're not even practicing mindfulness. You're not doing some amazing meditation practice like the yogis in the caves. You're just kind of like, ah. Letting the nervous system integrate on its own, letting this whole body and mind and heart find its own balance. It's kind of effortless. Just couch non-meditation. And then what we do relationally, this is, Devin and I do this a lot, is called checking in. Do you ever do check-ins? Does anyone here ever do check-ins? Yeah, couple, no. Some do, some don't. So check-in is a deceptively simple practice and much more powerful than you might think. It's basically relational mindfulness. So you sit down together, and we do this as partners, but we do this with our good friends. There are family members that will do this with us. You sit down together. Again, maybe you put the phone on airplane mode. You do it when your kids have gone to bed or when you have a moment when you know you won't be interrupted. And just with two people, or it could be three or four people, one person is the speaker and the other person is just the listener. And so in the check-in, the speaker speaks. Right? They just talk about what's on their mind. It does not have to be deep or somehow spiritual. It could be like, here's what I did today. I picked up the dry cleaning and I went to the grocery store and I drove to work and I drove back from my work. Oh, and my boss was a jerk again. And then this happened. All right. So it starts like on this level of just reporting whatever is going on, whatever's going on. But what we find often is that when you start to report, and if a person is really listening, you might even get to like, oh, and you know what? I've been feeling stressed lately. I can feel it right now, like in my body. You might feel like, and I notice that I have this tension. I have this tension in my body. And you start to report on how you're feeling in your body. And you might start to report on how you're feeling in your heart. It's like there's almost like a sadness maybe underneath that tension. It's hard to touch because I'm so busy. But as I'm talking about it now, right, maybe you find this sadness. So you're just speaking about your experience and the listener is just listening. So as the listener, you make this other person the object of your awareness. It's like you make them a meditation object. In the same way that you would pay attention to your breath or do a body scan in meditation, you give them your full attention. So that's your only job as a listener. You don't give advice. You don't interrupt. You don't do anything except just listen, right? And then after 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, not too long, because it's hard to be a listener for too long, but 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, then you switch and the listener becomes the speaker and the speaker becomes the listener. And so then if you've been the speaker, you just go into listening mode and you just deeply listen to your friend or to your lover, partner, parent, whoever it happens to be, as they tell you about themselves. I find this incredibly satisfying to do with Devin, and I love doing it with friends, both because I find that I can access deeper levels of my own experience when somebody's really listening to me, and because I love knowing what is happening with my partner. And I love knowing what is happening with my friends or family members. And it's gotten to the point now where both Devin and I coerce, gently, lovingly, coerce our friends into checking in. So like we'll have dinner guests over and, you know, when most people would be having hors d'oeuvres, we're asking them to sit in our living room and check in. Like I was walking this 3 mile loop that's at Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts a little while back. And I was walking with a friend and we were talking and there was a pause in the conversation. And then she said, "Oh no, are you going to make me check in?" I said, "Well, I don't know, make you, but it was great. It was great." She checked in. I checked in, and then there was like a deeper level of conversation that came out of that check-in. So the check-in is a central teaching in the book, right? So the book is this messy, gorgeous love, a Buddhist guide to lasting partnership. You don't have to be Buddhist to benefit from this book. But what we're doing is we're taking all of these principles of mindfulness that you're learning here at UCLA, and we're bringing them into relationship, right? It's not just about how you feel when you're sitting comfortably on a chair doing your settled, formal mindfulness practice. It's how you show up for people in your life. And I opened with this story of conflict, right? So it's how you show up during conflicts. It's how you show up when you're tired or when you're irritable or when you're confused and you don't know what to do. You know, all of this, all of these different situations and the complexities of our lives, that is the arena for putting these practices into work in real time. So the entire book is about how to do that in all of these different areas of your partnership, but also you can apply the principles and the practices to every part of your life. So in the book, we've got meditations that you can do, and we've got journaling exercises that you can do, and we've got relational exercises and partnership exercises that you can do as well. So I'm going to pull up there and would love to hear any comments or any questions. And actually, what I really like to do in communities that I don't know people is just hear on the chat. And I love hearing from everybody. If you can just type into the chat, how's this landing for you? And everything is welcome. So if it's landing well for you and you're really resonating, type that into the chat. If you don't like this at all and it makes not a bit of sense to you, type that into the chat. If you are questioning or doubtful, type that into the chat. I want to hear it all. Whatever is up for you, I would love to just know. How's it going? What are you noticing right now? How is this landing? Yeah, resonates very well with me. I would love to do check-ins with my kids, but don't think they'd want to do it though. Yeah, often it depends how old your kids are and what their kind of like character is like, but it might be a hard sell depending on who they are. I'm sure you've learned the art of bribery, so you might try that as a parent. This is awesome. Thank you for giving me different options of meditation. Great. Interesting. Yes. Okay. Love it. Can't wait to buy the book. Great.
I
Yeah.
might also, as folks are typing in, I might jump in and say, we get to know the people who are into check-ins and the people who are not into check-ins.
Exactly.
So there has to be some grace around, like, I know the friends who are going to be just as down for it as I am. And then the other ones, like, my family loves to do check-ins. Nico's family, not so much.
No.
So, you kind of feel your way into those different relations. It was great. I'm seeing lands well, do quick check-ins at work. Yeah, that's great to set the tone for meetings. Would love to try your check-in with my husband. That's great. And another person saying, check-ins are vital for me and have been a part of how I relate to myself and others for as long as I can remember. It's strange for me to encounter situations where this is not the norm. Yeah, it's totally great for us too. Really glad to know about your resources for teaching check-ins and to know other people value them as much as I do. For sure. Yeah, and there's other ways, like kind of more in-depth check-ins that we get into in the book as well. I'll read a couple more of these. So, love the check-ins. We'll try with my husband. Thanks, Nico, for sharing stories about your book. And then this is really helpful right now. We have work conflict, and my default is to want to fight, but it's helping me humanize the people at work. I don't think they will check in, haha. But stepping back from a viewpoint of understanding fellow humans. Absolutely, absolutely. And we do get into, we have a couple of chapters on conflict and rupture. We call it rupture like a pro. Because we name, this is true in a lot of mindfulness communities, that there can be a lot of conflict aversion. And so we get into these different conflict types and then ways to kind of understand. Most of it is self-knowledge, like understand your particular conflict style, understand the conflict style at work, in the work culture or other people. Your conflict style probably changes depending on who you're talking to. Like for me, I'm pretty volcanic with Nico, direct, clear, expressive. But with other people, mostly family, friends, I'm more kind of diplomatic, maybe. Less emotive, more kind of like, let's talk it out. Or even I might dodge a conflict altogether. So all of this is about deep listening, understanding our default, and then how to play to that strength. So we're getting a whole bunch more in. Do you want to read
Sure.
some,
So we've
Nico?
got Steven saying this makes perfect sense to me. And then Wendy is saying we'll have to try the couch non-meditation for sure. This is really awesome. And it's worth my time, much appreciated. I would recommend this book to friends. Yeah. Tell all your friends. In fact, you could just buy them several dozen copies. I think that would be excellent. Hi, can you talk us through how we'd begin a check-in with someone who has never done one? Yeah, that is a great question. So, the way that I would do it is I would sort of put my toe in the water, like try to take the temperature, see how open they might be. So I would say something like, I'm really getting into this practice of check-ins. And you know what a check-in is one person speaks and the other person listens. And I would just talk about in my own experience what I really appreciate about this, you know, the sense of intimacy or the sense of breaking new ground and having new insights or whatever it happens to be for you. So there's like a little bit of information, like you're telling them why you like it. Not telling them why they should like it or not trying to get them to do it necessarily, but just telling them why you like it. And then you could say, would you be interested in trying this with me? And then you'll get probably a yes or a maybe or possibly a no. But as you talk about it with people, I think you get more comfortable talking about the process and understanding for yourself why it's beneficial. And therefore, helping other people understand why it's beneficial. And so, if you get some no's, don't worry. I mean, we get some no's. We've got friends that simply will not do this with us. My family simply will not do this with us. But eventually, you'll find the people that will do this with you. So, just keep trying until you find the right people. Yeah, my partner doesn't like to listen to the emotions or the feelings that I have in my check-in. Does it mean he's not a good listener? That's a great question. So, some people are just not comfortable on the feeling level, on the emotion level. And there's kind of different ways to work with this, and we have to be a little bit flexible, a little bit fluid. So, on one side, it's very helpful to acknowledge difference, right? Oh, well, this person's just not comfortable with the emotional realm. And so, to some extent, I'm going to include less emotion or less feeling language in my check-in because that's just part of the dance of being married and hitting each other's kind of boundaries, limitations, and wonderful beneficial qualities, right? You're just like, okay, so maybe a little less on the emotional. And then the other piece, which is equally important, is seeing if you can find a way to talk about how he or they, she might meet you a little bit halfway, like, you know, some amount of feeling or some amount of emotion. So it's not necessarily that they're not a good listener. But it's like, how can you each move a little bit toward each other, understanding it's always going to be imperfect? It's always going to be a little bit rough and tumble. It's always going to be a little edgy. You're never going to have like this perfect, you know, connection that always just stays so smooth all the time because there's different character structures, there's different needs, and there's different ways of relating. So you're trying to find your way across these different ways of relating, but it can be painful sometimes. Yeah.
I'll just jump in if I can. Here, jump
Yes,
in.
please.
These are great questions. There's another one here that's kind of similar around. I'm curious, does one's partner need to be similarly introspective? And sometimes check-ins reinforce people's needs for a practice or a therapist. So true. And I think this is what in the book we're trying to dismantle some of this. There can be this idea that being a meditator or a mindfulness practitioner or teacher means a certain personality. Right? It means that you're really good at deep listening, and it means that you always love check-ins, and it means that you're not ever in conflict with anybody. Your life is very zen, right? So there can be these kind of these projections. And what we try to do in the book is like, no, everybody's human. There's these scales. I mean, we like all these different kinds of personality categories, right? Like there's the Enneagram, there's like love language, right? Understanding your love language. There's conflict styles. There's the Myers-Briggs, introvert, extrovert. I just learned yesterday there's a third, otrovert, which I think is me, where you really love talking to people and then you just need a ton of silence. So I think these, you know, however we subscribe to whatever personality category, it's like mindfulness doesn't give say you need to always be a five on the Enneagram or an Aquarius, right? It's more like mindfulness is about learning who we are, that deep listening. And then coming to really love and accept first this one, and then same thing with the other one. And when there's been that kind of internal, external listening, and then the both, the space between, there's so much room for creativity and responsiveness. So, right, there's a spectrum of empathy, there's a spectrum of emotions. Some of our dearest friends and longtime meditation teachers, our good friend here in the Midwest, he's like fully Midwestern. He's like, I experience two emotions, boredom and tired. That's kind of it, right? Just like not as emotionally big range, but really good teacher. So mostly it's like understand your situation, right? And from there, then there can be a lot of responsiveness. No need to judge. It's like, here's the person I've got. And in the book, we talk about this, whether it's a friend or a partner, it's like you can do this kind of external mindfulness on your own. You kind of take your partner, your person, as your meditation focus, and you consider, who is this person? Here's their strengths. Probably you know them really well. You kind of count all these strengths, all these lovable qualities. And then you kind of see, well, there's some edges. What are their challenges? You get to see, oh, they're not always patient, or when they haven't slept well, or kind of a mess. Like, you really take that in too, and you see the fullness of the human being, right? And when we do that, it's like, okay, now this is the one I've chosen, friend, partner, whatever it is, colleague. So how do we work now with this, the realness of this whole human here? And to me, that's a deeper kind of love than idealized projections or trying to fix the person, right? Or actually trying to fix yourself to be more like them. It's more like, no, let's really see things as they are, which is what we're doing in mindfulness anyway.
Yeah, there's a couple more here. So it seems like a check-in would be great for teenagers if you could get them to do it. I think Diana has a teenager. She could talk about that.
Good luck.
That's right. That's right. Be a very special teenager. Maybe they'd do a check-in with their friends, but never you. And then we've got Debbie saying, we do this on a regular basis, but didn't really know what we were doing. It just seemed right. So there's some wisdom that's just there for you. And I see using the couch non-meditation as a way to detach from technology for even a few minutes a day. That can be just such a relief for the system. And then Krista is saying, very insightful, definitely something everyone could use more of. We all need help in this area. I've been hoping to work on this more myself. I definitely do check-ins, but it might be thoughtful to widen my circle for check-ins. Great. Yeah. Yeah. One person direct messaged me and they were saying, hopefully, this will help them with their wife, who always insists on wearing a mask in a closed environment and only dine in restaurants with outdoor seats. Right. And like, this is another one of these differences. Like, nobody is perfectly matched on all fronts, but some people have more ease and comfort around germs and illness in public environments, and some people have less ease and comfort with getting, I mean, the possibility, the potential of getting sick if they're in public environments. We have a friend of ours that has been together for over 20 years, where during COVID, this became so tense that they had a trial separation, that they just couldn't even live together because they couldn't agree on the degree of masking and safety protocols. And then they did find their way back to each other, and they're stronger than ever. But we have these flashpoints, or we have these sort of grinds, these tensions. The Gottmans, who are marriage researchers and writers, they say, when you get married, but I think we could say, when you commit to a long-term intimacy, you inherit a set of problems that never goes away. And if you can be with that, if you can hang with that and know, like, okay, there's going to be a rub, makes it much easier. Much easier. I mean, except Devin. Devin never rubs me the wrong way. She's
Yeah.
Perfect. She's perfect
Except
in
for my
every.
feeling grumpy just an hour ago as we were eating dinner and getting ready for this.
Don't tell them. Don't tell them. They don't need to know.
I see another question here. What if there's no one to do a check-in with? Yeah, and this, I feel some tenderness around this question because often when we start to talk about relationships, it can feel this way and it can bring up a deep sense of loneliness and solitude. So I would expand our definition here of relationships. You know, Nico and I we're writing about partnership because we've been in one, but there's so many different ways to connect in the world. So I've got to say for myself, there's been years where my deepest connection was with trees. You know, I have several ones. I would go and check in with this tree. And they're good listeners, I got to tell you. And trees also give out a lot of kindness. So, you know, body of water, it could be a pet, an animal. The birds here in Madison have just been checking in with us all day long. They're right outside the window checking in. So I think this sense of, you know, everything is a relationship. When we're mindful in the present moment, we start to feel, oh, I'm relating to my body and I'm relating to my heart and my mind. I'm relating to the moment, and we're in relationship with the world. And that kind of accompaniment to me has helped with some of the loneliness because we are lonely, right? There is a kind of existential aloneness that we feel as humans. So just recognizing like you're not the only one who feels this way. A lot of us feel this way. A lot of, you know, some friends are like going through a divorce. They're like, I don't want to read this book right now. It's messy, gorgeous love. But we also talk about that in the book. You know, part of bringing this deep listening to every relationship is recognizing that sometimes they end. You know, and we have to be in with, you know, down with change. That's part of it too. We're all going to change. I love working here. I check in with my cat. Lovely. They're very good. Cats know. They listen, right? They understand your mood. You probably know theirs too. They're pretty clear. Yeah. I'm reading another one here. It says, I'm struck by the potential for non-judgment. Could be really useful for me as I relate to people with varied comfort levels with emotions, definitely. Yeah, it might be helpful for reducing suffering surrounding sadness around various relationships and how I've wished they could be. That's profound. You know, I think part of it is that we do need to grieve. When we come up against reality versus our projections or ideals, we have to kind of grieve sometimes. Like, oh yeah, this person isn't how I want them to be all the time. This friendship actually isn't giving me all that I need in it. I do this a lot. It's like, oh, but I want this person to be able to check in with me, but they don't want to. So that's a necessary process in coming into alignment with reality too. It's like not always going to go the way you want. These are
Yes.
great comments. Thank you, everybody.
So I dropped the link in here. And this link will take you to our website, which has all these different links that you can buy the book. You can buy the book anywhere books are sold. You can get it from your local bookstore. You can have them order it. You can get it, of course, on Barnes and Noble or Amazon or any of the big websites. But it's available on audio, and it is available on reader, e-reader, and it's available paperback. So the book is ready, and it just came out yesterday. We're very excited about it, and we are teaching an online 8-week course through Spirit Rock. So it's online. I think it's Thursday nights. Maybe it's at like 6 o'clock California time, I think, Thursday nights. It's 8 weeks long, and we are going to do a deep, deep dive into everything in this book. So there's like, you get guided meditations on the online learning platform that are from the book. You get them every week. You journaling prompts that are going to come to you every week. Talks that we're going to give every week on different parts of the book. And there's going to be a lot of time for hashing it out together and bringing up our real world actual experiences. Like, okay, here's where I'm stuck. Here's the wall that I'm hitting. Here's where I don't know how to apply the principles. And that's the whole point of this. Is like, yeah, the principles are great. The principles of mindfulness and meditation and kindness and equanimity. But when the rubber meets the road and you're spinning and you don't know what to do, that's where it's good to be like together, wondering, maybe in a class structure, talking it out together so you can really find out how to live it in your difficult moments.
Great. And of course, book reviews, all kinds of things are helpful for us. So, I'm really grateful for your practice and your presence here. And we will toss back to Diana, I think, for some more announcements, maybe.
Well, thank you so much. It's so inspirational. Yeah, I'm just so happy to have you here. And I want to say to everybody, I have read the book and it's wonderful. It's really, really filled with all sorts of stories from their lives. They're completely honest about their relationship and what it means to be in relationship and to have this mindfulness brought to it. So I highly recommend it. So just want to say a few things about UCLA Mindful. I think if you've seen the newsletter, you know that we are having a new pricing structure. Everything is pretty reduced from what it's always been. And of course, the ongoing continued free classes, but and then there's opportunities for generosity above and beyond that. So take a look at the new classes.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.